This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Coming up this hour, Eric McLean will join us at the bottom of the hour. Tim Bray, legendary SID from Clemson time, will join us, talk about the 50-year anniversary of the Tiger Paw. We'll get to all that stuff. But before we do, though, Wes, there's one more little piece of info that we want to throw on you this hour, right?
Yeah, Ryan Smith has been ESPN's legal analyst for many, many years, outside the lines and other projects as well. He's appeared with us a couple different times. And last night on the ESPN radio show, Freddie and Fitz, with Freddie Coleman and Ian Fitzsimmons, Ryan joined them on the heels of what we were talking about in Hour 1, Pack, and that was the conversation yesterday, testimony, whatever you want to call it, like Greg Sankey and others from Collegiate Athletics, to that congressional committee in Washington, and how it bled over from name, image, and likeness to, you know, how you're handling the pandemic and the coronavirus, and what's that going to mean when you bring students back to campus and so on and so forth. And that waiver concept, remember, that was rumored to be happening at Ohio State, and then later it was dismissed and not happening. Well, Ryan got into all of that as it relates to maybe fans going to games this fall.
Well, here's the thing. A waiver is not a bulletproof guarantee that you're not going to be sued, or if you do get sued, that you're going to win that lawsuit. And part of it has to deal with the fact that we're in the unknown. So you have people sign this waiver, and it basically says you're going to assume the risk that maybe it has something that says you promise that you don't have any exposure to the coronavirus. You agree not to hold us responsible if anything happens. But here's what I mean by the unknown. We don't even know if every state is going to approve this. We don't know all the protocols. There are no federal standards right now in many cases for what teams should do or what should happen at a stadium. So let's say I'm at a box and I'm with a bunch of my friends. None of us are wearing masks. We should be, but we're not. Nobody's watching us. Nobody's checking on us. We don't know how, even though you have this waiver, a court won't come back and say, hey, the minimum standard was everybody in the stadium was supposed to be wearing a mask. And you didn't do that. You didn't check on them. You didn't maintain it. The waiver might not cover you in this instant because what you were doing was beyond just the sort of negligence behavior a waiver would cover. This was grossly negligent. And that's part of the problem of where we are with the coronavirus. It's not like we have a ton of cases in the court system right now dealing with this virus and what happens if people catch it, even if they've signed a waiver. So for many courts, I think we're going to have to get on the other side of this with everything that could happen from it to really see how courts would look at some of these things.
You know, Wes, you know what we need in this country? We need more litigation. We don't have enough litigation in this country. I mean, for crying out loud, I want to go to a game. Do I sign the waiver? Yes, I'm going to go sign it. I think if you ask this question to most sports fans and you said, listen, would you be willing to sign a waiver to go and watch Team X play? I think the vast majority of fans would go, absolutely, I'm in. And you know what? If you don't, that's great. Stay home. Stay home. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what's going on right now.
Well,
it really is. Drive you crazy.
I'm gonna share this with you. And I thought of this as I was listening to this. I've got these framed credentials right here, right, as part of our backdrop. On the back of each of these credentials is a term of the credential, right? What it is, what you're allowed to do, so on and so forth. Same thing applies to the back of your ticket when you go to a game. It allows them the, you know, it gives them the rules or legality to eject you if you act the fool or whatever, right? We all know what the back of the ticket basically says. Well, do you need to look at the back of the ticket now? Could you assume the risk? I mean, baseball tickets, football tickets, they all vary a little bit. But people need to just have in mind that, you know, there's a risk, though, Pac, going to a game not in a pandemic, right? I mean, that's kind of where this is now.
Wes, I went off the other day on our radio show in the afternoon. I didn't even know this was a topic until I read it on Yahoo Sports about whether or not we should play the national anthem before domestic sporting events. And I'm like, what's happened to us? What are we doing? Well, I mean, this is a topic? I mean, we got a pandemic going on. We got racial and social unrest going on. We got no sports going on. And we're going to have a debate about whether or not we should play the national anthem. I mean, what are we doing? So, you know, like I said, almost tongue-in-cheek there with Ryan, who's a brilliant guy. We love having him on, by the way. He's really one of the smart dudes in the room. Yeah, I think we should have more litigation in this country. I mean, my goodness. Hey, I just want to go to a game. I mean, is that asking too much? I mean, seriously. And if you're afraid, hey, I get it. You can stay home. You've got the right to say, I'm going to pass. So I just hope we have games to attend, Wes, at this point in time.
I'm with you. Tim Beray, you know what? I'm just going to tell you the truth. This is a legend, not just at Clemson. This is an ACC legend. And the fact he's been a good friend to you and a good friend to me for too many years is that's a negative on his card. But otherwise, he's an all-around good guy, and we appreciate his time because Pac, as you have pointed out, as a mighty alum, this month they celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Tiger Paw.
Here is a publication that I received because, number one, I am an alum. I've already paid for one child to go through school. Another one's getting ready to be out a year from now. And in this month's edition of Clemson World, on I believe on page 50, our partner over here, Tim Beray, wrote this article on the 50-year anniversary of the Tiger Paw. And so if I find it, it's in here somewhere.
Look at this. Can't even find it, Beray.
I already know the story. You kidding? Here it is. Tiger Paw Turns 50 by Tim Beray right there. Right there.
Very good.
There it is. Pulitzer. It's a Pulitzer right there. He's also my old roommate because I used to shack up with old Tim Beray at the house. Man, we had a giant satellite dish in the back. They don't make those things anymore. And it's a true story that one time it snowed at Clemson. Man, we would get every channel in the world. We'd get Australian football before anybody knew Australian football. And the satellite dish froze because we had so much snow in it. So I went and got a shovel and a broom. And, I got in that dish and shoveled that thing out there. It's the most manual labor I've ever done in my life, making sure Tim Beray's satellite dish worked.
The most fun we had, Pac, was, of course, when your father did his show on the dish, which we could watch before he did games on CBS.
And, of course, if that was still going on today and then broadcasters did it, they would all be fired because there was no way you could get by with some of the nonsense that was going on during that point in time. And if you had a satellite dish back there in the Neanderthal days, you were into some serious inside information of which no one else in the world knew about.
Absolutely.
All right, 50 years of the Tiger Paw. Go ahead. Go for it.
Yeah.
Well, of course, the Tiger Paw really started as a concept after the 1969-70 academic year. Frank Howard retired after the 69 season, but he stayed on as athletic director, and Hootie Ingram came on to replace him. And he had a meeting with Bob Bradley one day about changing the image of the school a little bit, kind of freshening it up some. And Clemson's logo back in those days during Coach Howard was a horizontal picture of a tiger. And he thought, Hootie Ingram thought it'd be a good idea to maybe to change the logo. So it actually went up the food chain to Dr. Edwards, the university president. And he had a friend over at Henderson Advertising, the one who ran Henderson Advertising, who was a 1944 graduate. And he formed a committee that was led by John Antonio. And he was really the one who came up with the concept of the Tiger Paw.
Pac, take me to Coach Howard's office and let me know what Coach Howard would think if Hootie Ingram brought him the idea of a Tiger Paw. How would that go, Pac?
Well, if you read the story, Frank went, you know, I kind of like the way that thing looked right there. Why don't you bring that thing on in there? Maybe we'll go ahead and go and put that thing over there by the stadium.
In reality, what happened?
Is that about right, Tim?
Yeah, there was a meeting in Greenville when Antonio had the final product, and Coach Howard went, and some other university administrators, I'm sure Mr. Bradley went, And so Antonio was showing the tiger paw and all these different things, letterhead, whatever. And Coach Hopper was just kind of sitting there, not real impressed, wondering why he still probably wasn't the football coach. And then Antonio reached up and brought up a helmet. And on the helmet was a tiger paw. And that impressed Coach Howard. In fact, he asked Antonio if he could bring the helmet back to campus because he wanted to show it to everybody and tell them this is what they were going to do. So the fact that Antonio put it on a helmet stole Coach Howard, and that was the difference.
Look good to me. I think them boys ought to do it and run down the hill. Leave you filthy and don't touch that rock unless you give me 110%.
Got it.
Oh, my God.
And it's tilted, right, Tim? It's tilted to, again, the gray of the paw is tilted to 1 o'clock because that's what time kickoffs are in Death Valley.
Well, I gotta tell you, I'd actually talked to Antonio about that before he passed away, and that became kind of an urban legend type of thing. But he actually told me that it's tilted at 1 o'clock because that was the form that it was sent to him from the museum in Chicago. And actually, that's the way a tiger walks. His paws are tilted at that precise angle. So there wasn't any change made. It made sense that it was at 1 o'clock. But in reality, that's the way the original came to Antonio because that's the way a tiger's paws face when they walk.
All right, Tim, the fact that it's appeared on countless $2 bills is one thing. Where is the most unique place that you've ever seen the Clemson Tiger Paw?
I'd have to say just the use from different people. I had a picture on our file. Bill Foster met President Jimmy Carter on a trip to a foreign country once, and he got Jimmy Carter to put a tiger paw, a sticker on his jersey, now on his golf shirt that day. So, we've seen tiger paws all over the place, but I think seeing it used or held by famous people or whatever has added to the brand.
Boy, I tell you what, I'm not going to answer that question.
Oh my God!
I'm not going to answer that question. No. I'm going to protect everybody. I'm going to protect the innocent on that. I'm not going to answer that question.
Now we'll add this to the story about famous people. When 1985 Clemson played Georgia in the first game that was televised by CBS, and Brent Musburger and Ara Parseghian were doing the game. And Musburger somehow convinced Ara to be the grand marshal in the first Friday parade before that day. And somebody from Central Spirit came over and painted a tiger paw on Musburger's face and then painted one on Ara's face. So that was an all-timer, especially for me, to see Ara Parseghian wearing a tiger paw on his face.
I knew somehow, some way, there would be a Notre Dame reference in this interview. I knew somehow. Yeah. I wasn't sure how you were going to get us there, Bone. But you know what? You got a Notre Dame reference in there at some point in time. I'm proud of you.
I just did it off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Just like everything else. Has there ever been... In the 50 years that you know of, Tim, has there ever been a move to get away from the tiger paw?
Absolutely, 100% no. I think everybody who's ever worked at Clemson, even the new coaches that come in, they know about the tiger paw, and just it's such a distinctive logo, and when you see it, that's Clemson. You know, when John Antonio researched all the schools that had Tigers as mascots, there were 32 across the country, but every one of them had some kind of picture of a tiger. So this was certainly distinctive. I remember even when Coach Hatfield came to Clemson, one of the things he wanted me to do was to have just a white cover of the media guide with an orange tiger paw on it and nothing else, no words or anything, because he knew that, you know, represented Clemson. I backed off on it because I always would like to use the press guide to promote players for the following season. And, you know, I think that following year, Lavon Kirkland was going to be a senior, and I just didn't think it was right to not have him on the cover after he had such a great career.
That's why Bure lasted and Hatfield didn't. You know, I will also remember the first time that I ever went to Clemson for a game. And I remember driving down I-85. This was 100 years ago. And I remember seeing the Tiger Paws right off I-85 on the road. And you're like, what in the world? I mean, again, this was 100 years ago. And you saw those giant orange Tiger Paws 20 miles from Clemson heading to, hey, you're heading to Death Valley, baby. Let's go. And you saw them right on the road. And you realize, holy mackerel, this place is nuts. And sure enough, man, you got to town and there were Tiger Paws everywhere you looked. And it is such an iconic brand. There are certain brands and marks that you see that you don't need words. You just know it, you see it, and you go, yep, that's the Clemson Tiger Paw right there, my man. And so, yeah, they're never going to change that forever. Ever and ever and ever. It's awesome.
And I guess this is also the part of the interview where we should talk about, what is it, Tim, the 16th hole at the Walker Course, the par 3 with the Tiger Paw? Is that right?
Actually, the 17th hole. And, yeah, that's terrific. I mean, that's the signature hole. It's got the sand traps where the paws would be, and it's right on the water. It's a beautiful, beautiful hole. But, yeah, when you stand back on the tee and look at it, it's very distinctive. It's right there. So, yeah, you're right. It's a terrific aspect of that course.
And the paw, by the way, tilts.
Thanks, as always.
Wait a minute. The paw on the 17th hole tilts directly to Timberay's back patio. It's amazing how that works. Incredible.
I had some influence with the design.
There you go. I was going to say that I look forward to Tim's next return visit to Packer and Durham. This won't be your last, by the way, Bure. I guarantee it. On your next appearance on Packer and Durham, we're going to have you and Pac discuss, now that statute of limitations has apparently run out on this, all the video you guys used to watch on that big satellite dish you had for free and broke all sorts of copyright laws in the country.
No, we're not ending on that. Tim, explain to Mr. Durham that there were no rules broken, no FCC policies in danger. You had the dish. I was a roommate. If it needed maintenance, I'd go out there and do the best we could with it. But we had access to anything in the world on television, and it was all legit.
Right.
Well, you always said, Pac, we had the express written consent of Major League Baseball and Billy Packer, so we were good. Now, it would have been interesting, though, if we had the internet in 1986, and we would have posted some of those things on YouTube. Then we probably would have gotten in some trouble.
That's a whole separate league. Again, we just talked about litigation before we brought you on. We got too much of it in this country. We got too many lawyers. But you're 100% right. We were legit. It was all above board. There was no nonsense going on there. So I don't want to hear any lip from Durham or anybody else. It was all legit.
I got to be honest with you, Pac. I still got the VHS.
Oh, you do? Oh.
Yes.
Oh, wait a minute now.
We got to get it converted. Nobody in the it's late now.
We have to talk about that now.
Thanks to Tim Bure. Unbelievable. Tim, you're the best. Appreciate it. All stay well, my man. Look forward to seeing you soon.
I'm just glad I went before Eric McClain and not after.
There you go. That's it.
I agree. Couldn't have said it better myself. Stay tuned. More Packer and Durham coming up. We get to some unique football stats that are ahead in the 2020 season. And, yes, Eric McClain, bottom of the hour, on some of the numbers and things he's been diving into as we get ready for ACC football in 2020. Sit tight. You're watching ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. 844 say ACCN. Got Eric McClain coming up here in about 5-10 minutes, give or take. Thanks to Tim Bure. Legendary figure at Clemson, one of the all-time great SIDs, and he followed one of the all-time great SIDs in Bob Bradley. And Tim being a Notre Dame guy and a Clemson guy, obviously tied in together. That's why we're kidding around about throwing a Notre Dame reference in there with Air Parsegian. But Tim and I were roommates when I got out of school and went to New York, came back to Clemson, and lived with Tim. And, man, if those walls could talk, West Durham, if those walls could talk.
I'm just glad to know that the that all the rights to broadcast were approved by Billy Packer off that satellite dish. That's the number one thing I gleaned from the whole deal.
And it was, let me tell you something now. It wasn't one, when I say a satellite dish, because people think of something that's stuck on the side of your house. No, no, no. I'm talking about a satellite dish that if you stuck it in Bristol, Connecticut, outside the ESPN campus, it'd go, wow, that's pretty impressive. That dish fits in with ours. It was a monster. You could park a Jeep in this satellite dish. I mean, it was a monster. And when you moved it, like the whole neighborhood knew we were moving to some Australian channel. Like, I mean, the whole neighborhood would shake when that thing moved. It was awesome. It was awesome.
So you had the old eight. Did you have an 8-meter dish?
Dude, you couldn't fit. You could not fit that dish in the basement. It was a monster.
It's 8 meters.
Yeah. They don't make them anymore. Unless you're ESPN. And who,
Did Beret buy that dish? Is that what happened?
No, it was there before I showed up. It was there before I showed up. But it never snowed in Clemson. But I'm telling you, the day it snowed, that thing, I mean, it was packed with snow. And I looked at Tim, I said, what do you mean the dish isn't working? He said, Pat, it's frozen. I said, no. I'm getting out there. And I was in the dish with a shovel. I said, man, I don't care. If we're going to get snowed in, we're going to get this satellite dish working because we're going to at least have that going for us while we're stranded down here at the bottom of the hill. So we got that thing working, brother. But Beret was awesome, man. He's fantastic.
That's awesome. That's awesome. By the way, Eric McLean coming up here in just a minute. We got a couple stats we're going to go over with him as it relates to ACC football. I'm going to be honest with you. These are coming from some of the ESPN stats and information folks, but one guy that I wanted to point out here going to break is Wake Forest center Zach Tom. In his career at Wake Forest, Pack, he is the center for Dave Clawson's team. Now, we know Jamie Newman, Sam Hartman. Look at this. 1,229 snaps, no sacks, no penalties. Come on now. Really?
That's pretty strong, that number. I got to be honest with you. That's almost impossible, isn't it? 1,229 snaps, not one time you're not holding?
I want to talk to McLean about this. I think that this stat right here, I mean, there's some other ones too. I mean, like Sage Surratt is like highest graded returning red zone target, all sorts of things in college football. There are all these other stats we've got. But that one right there just popped off the page, and I thought, wait a second. That's an unbelievable stat because we were just talking about Mitch Hyatt earlier in the week on the All-Decade team about the number of snaps he played in his college career period. Zach Tom's had 1,200 snaps at center, no penalties, no sacks.
You know,
that's pretty good now. I mean, I don't care who you are.
Dude, that's awesome. But here's the problem, though. If I'm Zach, I'm sitting there watching this show going, shh, I don't need any attention. Don't give me any attention. Because you know, if you tell me that there hasn't been a flag thrown my way, I haven't given up a sack. Now everybody's going to be like, hey, man, what about that center at Wake Forest? It's untouchable. I mean, if you're Zach, it's like, hey, stay low, keep moving, man. Don't say anything. I'm just going to go out there and do my job. That is an amazing number.
All right, we're going to run it by Eric McLean. He's our offensive lineman. We'll talk to him when we come back, as well as hope y'all been hitting McLean up on Twitter like you did me and Pack. He's putting together an all-ACC team. Sit tight. The big man joins us next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday, 844-SAY-ACCN is the number. Many thanks to Tim Beret, who just joined us, Josh Pastner in hour number one, head men's basketball coach, Georgia Tech. And right now we bring on our very own ACC Network No flags thrown at this dude. Eric McClain.
Come on.
Right? No holding.
What's up, guys?
No illegal use of the hands. No tripping. No face mask. No nothing. Right?
A couple of taunting penalties here and there, but other than that, I was pretty clean.
All right. Now, wait a second. Hold on. I want to review the numbers on this stat about Wake Forest center Zach Tom here real quick. In his career at Wake Forest, he's been the center for 1,229 snaps. No sacks allowed, no penalties committed.
That is an amazing football player. Come on. No, I didn't play that many snaps. I wasn't that good.
Wrong. All right. That's an unbelievable stat, is it not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the discipline to number one, not commit any holding penalties or false starts, especially at the center position, not to even flinch when you got guys running around you, linebackers creeping up. And then, of course, to not give up any sacks that's a remarkable skill set for that young man.
All right.
Mac, before we get to something else here, I am interested. How many times – what was the worst call against you at Clemson, on you personally? They threw the flag and you looked at the ref and you said, mm-hmm. You got to be absolutely kidding me, dude. Are you kidding me? Like, what was the – set the scene of what it was and what was the call?
So we were playing, I believe it was Boston College, and we were running a screen play kind of out to the left. And you really just – you set it up. You throw your hands up. You want to show that you're, you know, pass blocking. You get the defender to run by you. And then I'm just out in space and turn around and see a linebacker about to tackle Wayne Gallman. And, I mean, just absolutely knock him out. And it got called for, unnecessary roughness because it was coming back to the line of scrimmage. And I just thought that was absolutely crazy.
And did you say anything that was almost worthy of another flag or not? Or did you just go?
Not to the ref, but definitely to my teammates for sure.
How about to the guy that you blocked?
There were probably some choice words there as we were laying on the ground together.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right. You and I exchanged text a couple of weeks ago when you were starting to build this Eric McClain's All-ACC preseason team. And you've actually – this has been like a project now. I mean,
yeah.
Take me through doing this because Packer and I have been getting blasted for 96 hours on our All-Decade team. So I want to know how the Eric McClain All-ACC 2020 team came together.
Yeah, well, you guys obviously had a lot more people to choose from and a lot more people to make angry. So I had a very limited group in this 1 year, but it was just something that I had wanted to put together. Number one, to help me throughout this season to really just identify, you know, maybe some guys that we didn't know about a year ago or some people that are going to step up and say, hey, we really need to pay attention to this group. But just with the help of some great colleagues of ours, David Hale, and some others that really just went through this list with me, including yourself, it was something that I wanted to create to get to the fans and say, hey, look, these are some of the people that you might see come December. Really pay attention to them because they're going to be some standout players.
I'm just going through your list here. One quarterback, two running backs, three wide receivers. There's that AP thing that I left off. that's going to get my man Rashad Green back on my team. I'm going to do a revote.
There you
on
go.
My all decade because that AP on it, that all purpose thing throw in there at the last second because you're like, man, I can't leave him out. I can't leave Tutu Atwell out. So let's put him in there at AP.
I saw so many different lists that had that AP. So I was like, yeah, I'm adding this. I'm getting another baller on the field. And Tutu is just, he's so dynamic that he can. You know, have influence in the run and the pass game. So I figured instead of having another running back there, who better than to have Tutu Atwell at my all-purpose?
Don't get me wrong, I like Jimmy Morrissey at Pitt, but what about Zach Tom? He's never held or given up a sack in almost 1,300 snaps.
I know. It's tough with offensive line, man. There's so many great guys in this conference and this league. You know, I probably could have slid him in there maybe at the two spot. But again, it's deep, you know, with Jimmy, with Alec, and then even a surprise guy that I think some people are going to find out really quick about, Brock Hoffman of Virginia Tech. Those three are just nasty players, mm-hmm. but no doubt, Zach Tom, he deserves some credit as well.
Mac, I'm impressed that you've got Trevor Lawrence. I'm impressed that you've got Trevor Lawrence at quarterback. I had a tweet yesterday from a guy that made the statement that Trevor Lawrence isn't even playing in 2020. So our boy Hot Take Vinny down there, the moron. So you can confirm that Trevor Lawrence is the quarterback, right? He is going to play in 2020. Is that right?
That's what I've heard. That's my inside source that he will play in 2020.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Just want to make sure.
Oh, my God. Hey, Eric, I want to give you credit because unlike Packer, you only picked two defensive tackles on your team this year because Mark elected to go with the very unique 6-3-4 set in his defensive all-decade team earlier this week.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Whatever you need to make plays up front is what you got to do.
By the way, my defense still looks better than anybody else's because, you know what? I'm bringing in dudes. I got 15
well, yeah,
dudes
on
my
side. You
got
two more guys.
Yeah, no doubt.
I tell you what, guys, the ACC from a talent perspective this year is so deep. And you look at the individual positions. When I'm talking about edge rushers and defensive backs, you know, I don't know if there's another conference that's even close to what the ACC is going to be putting out this year. You're looking at, I mean, when I was coming up with these teams for the first team defensive end edge players, I mean, it was a struggle between, you know, Rousseau, Basham, Roche, Rump, Xavier Thomas, Victor Dimukeji from Duke. The list goes on and on. Mm-hmm. Patrick Jones at Pitt. There's so many guys that it's just, they all deserve that first team, but there's only two spots, and then DB's a whole nother story that you can just go on and on about. It's going to be really fun to see, does that individual talent transfer to wins and wins out of conference for the ACC this year?
All right, Eric, I want to ask you about a guy who is not on your first team defense here, but I'm sure figured into the discussion, and that was Quincy Roche, who's transferring from Temple. How close were you to putting a guy who basically was the American Defensive Player of the Year on your first-team All-ACC before he ever played a snap in this league?
Yeah, I flip-flopped it about three or four times before I finally had it to where I thought Basham just deserved the nod. Again, Quincy Roche is such an electric player. I am more than excited to see him and Rousseau on the other side. I mean, you talk about two bookends that are going to just – absolutely electrify the Miami defensive line. And they even have a couple of guys on the inside that I think will be standouts when it's all said and done as well. So Quincy Roche was right there for me. I just had to give Boogie Basham the nod.
Eric, you mentioned the depth at defensive end. You know, if we were going to do a second team, I think that Wes and I talked about this last week. The quality of quarterback play in this league, this particular upcoming season, as good as it was, so you go back to 2016 when we started talking about Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson, and the list goes on and on. The league's got terrific quality at the top and depth at the quarterback position. I think it's one of the reasons there's so much expectations in terms of, hey, we know about Clemson, but there could be another four or five, maybe six teams, if everything falls into place, that could be solid top 25 programs.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Pac. I was sitting here trying to rank the entire – you know, quarterbacks for the ACC. We put out the top five last night, but looking at all of them, the depth is there. And if you have a couple of guys step up big time, like Chase Bryce at Duke, De'Aaron King at Miami, I mean, this position group could be absolutely elite. And again, you talk about another group in the ACC that, you know, I don't know who else in the country can match that, you know, quarterback for quarterback. So when you look at just the complete list and just the amount of guys that you could say, hey, they could go out here and win us a game any given Saturday. What I'm really excited to see this season is to see the progress from Syracuse, Tommy DeVito, see what strides he can make. You know, a lot of his balls last year were either dropped or just a hair off with some miscommunication. So I think if he takes a step forward, and then at Pitt, if they can just get the ball into the end zone, you know, I loved what we saw from them. From an offensive perspective, but just had to get the ball in the end zone a couple more times. I think if those two can make those strides, you know, the ACC is going to be just fine.
All right, Eric, I'm going to put you on the spot here. We're going to move to July 2nd. Now, we're not going to hold this against you a month from now, maybe,
<Thank you. laughs>
but I don't think we will, all right? I want you to tell me today who you like in the Coastal and why, and who is Clemson's biggest challenger this year in the Atlantic Division.
Yeah, right now for the Coastal, I'm just so in love with UNC and what they have coming back. When you see their skill positions, three wide receivers that I think can match up against anybody in the country, Bo Corrales, De'Ami Brown, and Daz Newsome, just very explosive guys that run the route tree extremely well. You have two almost 1,000-yard running backs coming back for North Carolina. And then the sophomore phenom who took the world by storm last year, and Sam Howe, now has another year in this offense where he can really make it his own. You know, it was very fun to watch how the offense evolved and changed from week to week last season, how he really just, you know, was very limited at the beginning. And then by the bowl game, you know, it was everything was an option. I can't wait to see the tweaks that they make there. I think Miami has a chance again with their defense. And if De'Eriq King can be a sliver of what he was at Houston, his, you know, sophomore year. So if they can bring those together, I think Miami will have a shot as well. But I'm staying with UNC to play the Tigers in Charlotte for the championship. And then for second place in the Atlantic, I'm really between Louisville and, this might be surprising, but Florida State. I think Louisville has the offense. I think Florida State has the defense. When you look at elite talent, Louisville has a trio of running back, wide receiver, and running back that I think, again, are so explosive, and they're going to rely very heavy on. And Florida State's defensive backfield is just absolutely tremendous. So if they can turn it all on offense and get that offensive line blocking and holding up for, you know, Scary Terry to catch some 50-yard bombs, you know, either one of those teams, I think, could have no question, could be number two behind Clemson.
Eric, let me follow up with, who's the sleeper? Give me a sleeper and pick either side, I don't care, or give me a couple if you're in the mood. Who's the one team, though, in particular that you say, you know what, don't sleep on these guys? Who is that?
You know, I think it's that sign right behind your head, Pack. I think it's Pitt. I think the defense that they have is absolutely tremendous. I think you can stack that defense up against anybody. Paris Ford is my man. I love the way he plays. He's just a hard hitter, which it's actually sad the way he plays because it's so limited in today's game because of the targeting penalty. He can't be his true enforcing self. But if he can just try to stay away from, you know, hitting people too high, you know, I think that Pitt defense is going to give people absolute nightmares.
Or we could get some better referees that know the rules, and so he can just go ahead and tackle people.
Wow. Wow.
Call him out.
Really?
What do you mean,
July
wow?
2nd.
Let me tell you
July
something.
July 2nd.
If Pat Narduzzi's watching right now, he's sitting there going, you tell him, Pack. And if Paris is watching, he's going, Pat, you say it, Pack, and I'm saying it. You know, there were some calls against him last year that were absolutely criminal. The dude is a baller.
I agree with you.
He's a baller.
I agree with you. Yeah, he's a game changer. And it's interesting to see kind of the safety talk back and forth between Cisco and Ford. And I think Ford has to get the nod. I think he is the more complete player that really just – he impacts the entire field, not just the defensive backfield.
What about Nasruddin at Florida State?
Yeah, freaky.
That guy.
And huge athlete, a guy led the team in tackles.
Huge.
And that's again when you look at Florida State's defensive backfield, very similar to Pitt and the versatility that they have, the guys that they have that can move up close to the line of scrimmage, go back and make plays. We saw him with a huge pick six where you see an athlete that big running for that long, it's a thing of beauty. So there's no doubt about it. I mentioned the individual talent that we're going to see from the ACC this year, that you're going to see guys all over NFL big boards, guys mentioned in the first through third round. It's going to be very impressive this year to see. The biggest question, though, is does it translate to wins?
You know, we started this hour.
By the way, more of
Wes, hold on a sec. We started this hour with Tim Bure. All right. We're going to end it almost here with Eric McClain. So I'm going to tie this together. I just got a text from Tim Bure, right? Mr. Stat. And he says, believe it or not, I have a file with offensive line grades for 2015.
Look out.
Eric
Maclean.
All
my lines are coming to the
We're putting it all together now. Eric Maclean had 1,096 plays, gave up 1.5 sacks, and had 4 penalties. That from the gospel.
Tim, that's a lie. That's not true.
So there you have it.
I love it. Those were Mitch Hyatt's sacks. Those weren't my sacks.
All right.
That's it. Blame Hyatt.
Hey, don't forget, follow the ACC Network on social media. You'll get more of Eric McLean's position rankings. Those will be coming out in the days ahead. And we appreciate Eric taking time away from his DIY projects in the capital of South Carolina today to join us on the show. Tell Khaki hello. Be well, my man. We'll see you soon.
No doubt. Hey, I got to go put my dirty overalls on. I had my TV ones on earlier. Y'all be good.
That's exactly right. You know better. You know better than that coming out there with those pressed overalls. You can't. That's not selling anything.
Yeah.
Come on, man. It's not Myers Park.
Exactly. All right.
Appreciate y'all always, man. Be good.
Sit tight. All right, bro. Be well. Hey, when we come back on Packer and Durham, we're going to close the show. There's new math out about the aging of dogs that's a little concerning this morning. And we apparently have found our demographic with Packer and Durham viewers. And boy, have we hit it big, Pack. But how long is a dog year? We'll tell you in a moment.
Packer and Durham. Packer and Durham.
Well, I appreciate you guys. Listen, I just want to let you know that every morning going into it, last season, I listened to you guys, I watched you guys, and my entire goal, and I told our team this, we had to get out of the glob. And we finished the and I want some credit from you guys. I want some credit because the season happened so fast. We got first place of the glob. And don't forget that, like, we won the club. And so I want to make sure that you guys give us enough shout outs that, because all year long you talked about the club and we won the glob, and there should be some, we should get a plaque or something for the glob that we won.
You know, we should do that. That's why I said give me 10 seconds, because I knew we had our glob picture. I've got it on our infamous storage in the wine cellar, which is almost like a institution over there. It's almost like a museum when you walk in through there. So we do need to get something to Josh and the Georgia Tech basketball program. Maybe that becomes an annual staple on Packer and Durham, the winner of the glob. We'll see.
If we define the glob every year, right? We got to define where that glob falls every year. Is that right?
Yeah, but I think we're going to have that, don't you? I mean, there's always going to be a combination of elite teams in this league from a basketball perspective, and there's always seemingly going to be at least 3 or 4. This past year it seemed like there were 7 or 8. But the glob, I think everybody has a kind of a glob in their league, right? There's always that mix of teams that you try to wonder, all right, are they ready to take the next level and make it move? So I think maybe we incorporate that this year.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. By the way, we started the show today welcoming a new member to the Packer and Durham family. One of our youngest fans, Carl from South Carolina, who called ACC Central, has been a longtime listener, longtime viewer. Simmet and Amanda, who are friends of mine, full disclosure, their daughter Sophia is 11 months old. Simmet tells me that Sophia has watched more Packer and Durham than any other show in her 11 months on the planet. Mark, concerned that our demographic is so young?
Well, I'm not concerned about that, but I will pray for her. She will eventually work herself out of it and hit Sesame Street, and everything will be rocking and rolling. But we do appreciate each and every person that's watching the program and enjoying it. So there you go. But we'll pray for it.
All right. Final note today, ahead of tomorrow's show, which, by the way, features former Clemson basketball standout Tevin Mack, who's part of the Tigers alumni group in the TBT that starts next week. And also E.J. Manuel will join us as well. That'll be fun to talk quarterbacks with him. A study at the University of California at San Diego says a dog year is not 7 human years. And pets may be older than you think, Mark.
Are you going to break it down for me? Because I don't know the answer to this.
Well, they're saying that a year old in dog is similar to 30 years of human. A 4-year-old dog is 52 years. And then the aging process slows the older they get. So it's not right at 7 years like we've kind of all been taught in a year for a dog.
Well, Chester is sound asleep right now on the green room chair. And Chester, by the way, celebrates his 12th birthday on August 1st. So he's coming up. So what would that be the equivalent? Do you have that broken down for me yet? 12 years equals what?
Be about 70 years old. Chester would be about 70.
Kind of like his master. So, all right. So Chester will be basically 70 human years coming up August 1st. And then Fuller, who's sitting on my feet right here, celebrated his 6th birthday in May. So there you go.
That'd be somewhere about 60 years old.
Yeah. So that's why they like me, because we're all in the same kind of demographic there. Same neighborhood. You got that? But, and nothing with cats, because you're this a cat guy. Nothing with cats?
The study was dogs.
Yeah, of course. Dogs first, cats second. Get it?
By the way, tomorrow, T-Shirt Friday with Tevin Mack and EJ Manuel. Video blog for the mailbag, always welcome. Packer and Durham, the hashtag. Send us the video with your question or comment horizontally. Thanks to Drew and Josh for producing, Jen for directing. Great show today. Tim Beret, Josh Pastner, and Eric McLean. We'll see you for Friday, Packer and Durham at 8 a.m. tomorrow on ACC Network. We hope you have a great day.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.